Welcome back to the Cannabis Corner. My name is Lucas Barfield. I'm a local Tacoma cannabis activist, researcher, and educator, and I'm joined by my co-host, Uncle Dig, a cannabis activist and veteran out of Oregon. How are you doing today, Uncle Dig?
I am doing absolutely fabulous. We had a little bit of rain this morning down here in southern Oregon, so the smoke is kind of cleared out of the air, at least temporarily, so I am breathing free and feeling fine.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting that same thing. We got the smoke going on, but it looks like, from the wildfires, but it looks like the wind, unlike last year where all the smoke got sucked offshore and then pushed back onshore, it looks like this year the onshore flow is helping us out and all the rest of the country is getting all that smoke, which, you know, is bad, but it's good for us because it's not going to be messing us up in our growing season. But we need to get some of that smoke, some of that cannabis smoke maybe blowing over to Washington, D.C. We were talking about some things right before the show, and we just wanted to mention, I know we've been kind of saying that federal legalization was be coming down the road, but it looks like that we just kind of wanted to say that it's kind of stalled a little bit, and we're not so sure if anything's actually going to happen on the federal level when it comes to cannabis this year, Dig.
Yeah, you know, all signs point to the Senate not being a leader on this particular issue. They've shown that they have been hesitant to take it on in the past. And as long as everything is so partisan and the Republicans view rightly that cannabis is not an issue they have a good platform on, that the Democrats, like Chuck Schumer's been making a show of like trying to pass the more, like get the MORE Act introduced in the Senate. But waiting for the Senate to do anything like progressive for good or ill is like waiting for paint dry during a southern rainstorm. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I'm not hopeful this year.
Yeah, Schumer and a couple senators kind of combined different things. I think they're trying to do something a little different than the MORE Act, but it's kind of the same thing. And then they got the Safe Banking Act, which is going to get the banks, which is really important. A lot of dispensaries getting robbed because they got all the cash on hand. And as somebody who's kind of in the cannabis industry and looks at these things, it's hard to get capital. I mean, you can't go to the bank and get a $100,000 loan to open up a new cannabis business. And another big problem is if you do and you put your house as collateral and then you go bankrupt, you have no protections. So there's all these things that are trying to get fixed, but it's just going real slow and just not sure what's happening next on the federal level. So let's keep an eye on that, Dig, and then we will get back to that topic. It's just kind of an ongoing thing. We just wanted to update the audience on that. It's not one of our news stories, but just kind of something we have been noticing. But we're going to get on to our first news story, and that's right here in Washington. And we mentioned this last show, I believe it was, or it might have been two shows ago. We were having these issues with the Delta 8 and Delta 9. And I actually got to see some Delta 8 dabs this past week, Dick.
Yeah, did you try them?
No, I actually did not. Strangely enough, the Delta 8 dabs came from Texas. But I smelled them. It had no smell because it's pure distillate. But, you know, I had heard about the Delta 8 and it had like just some of the issues with maybe getting everything out of it. And I just wasn't quite sure where it came from. And I just was not in the mood that day to try something new. So I did not try the Delta 8. But the other controversy that was going on here in Washington State that is just as big or bigger than the Delta 8, and that is this, and we said that we would bring you an update on this, and that is this synthesizing Delta 9 from hemp-derived CBD. Kind of a complicated little thing there. So tell us a little bit about what you know about hemp-derived CBD, Dick. Kind of what does that mean to you?
Well, I mean, if we're just talking about hemp-derived CBD, I mean, we're talking about, I mean, that can be as simple as doing an extraction, like either with a solventless or doing a press for rosin of hemp flower to extract CBD.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. And it is exactly what has been happening is we've talked about this before, they had a glut of hemp-derived CBD. And so they have this stuff, it's called distillate. So it's basically just pure CBD. They take out all the terpenes, they take out everything. And the word was that they had like 55-gallon drums of this stuff all over the United States, just packed up in warehouses. Nobody knows what to do with it.
right? Like all that CIA government acid they still got out there.
Yeah, yeah. It's just sitting up somewhere. But somebody got smart and said, hey, we can actually take this, a chemist somewhere, and said, hey, we can do a couple things on this, and we can artificially turn CBD into Delta-9 THC. And what is Delta-9 THC, Dig?
It's the active ingredient in edibles, right?
Yeah, that's the stuff that gets you when you eat an edible, or even the stuff that part of the entourage effects when you use flower. That's that kind of high feeling that you get from cannabis, which we know is also the terpenes and all the other stuff in there too. But it's sort of the main event when it comes to cannabis is the Delta-9 THC. Well, somebody in Washington State got the great idea to buy CBD derived from hemp, and then run it through a chemical process and make Delta-9 THC, and then that was being sold onto the legal market. And they were doing this right out in the open. There's some testimony out there. One of the brands, and I'm not going to mention the brand because one of the people I know actually got a cease and desist letter from this company, so I don't actually want to mention who they are. But if you get online and do a little research on hemp-derived CBD in Washington State, you can kind of track down who these folks are and stuff. But they decided that they would do this, and then they were taking all that THC, and apparently they were making about 200 liters of this a month, Dig, and selling it out on the market.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that makes me so angry, and it also concerns me a little bit because, you know, this is they're passing off a synthetic product as natural, and I know that natural is kind of a bendy word, right? But when you're buying THC on the legal cannabis market, you may have, you know, spiritual reasons or body reasons why you want a naturally derived product from a plant. And at this point, we're two steps removed from a plant. There's no natural cannabis terpenes in this stuff. It's about as synthetic as you get. And I don't know, that whole thing makes me feel icky. And it also kind of reminds me of like how spice used to be a big problem in the States before legalization started to take hold.
Yeah, yeah. But the scary thing is, and I've heard a chemist from the WSLCB say this, is you can't actually tell the difference between Delta-9 THC from the cannabis plant and this synthesized cannabis THC, synthesized Delta-9 THC. The big issue is all the chemicals made, used to make this stuff. Like, they were saying some of the things I was reading online from different people in different labs. There's a whole big chunk of this synthesized Delta-9 THC when they run it through a lab. They don't even know what it is. A lot of the adulterants and stuff left behind. The chemists don't even really have a protocol to test for a lot of this stuff. So
it's not even a pure product?
No, well, it is a pure product if you do it 100% correctly, but as we know, it's not always done correctly. So
okay,
it's like after they, what they're saying is after they take the Delta-9 THC out of their new concoction, you know, they separate it out. It'd be like a big vat of stuff, and they separate it out. Some of that leftover material, they don't even know what it is. And that's kind of, that's weird and scary that you're getting some of off of something that's so kind of weird that they don't even have a test for it.
Oh, and see, and I thought that my genius solution to this on the legal market would be to just buy flower. But our common friend who we're talking about, who got the cease and desist letter from, you know, that company.
Jim McCray. He's been on the show.
Jim said that they were also putting it on hemp flower sometimes to make it have THC. And I don't know if that stuff made it into the legal market, but if they're doing that, that means that there's not really a guarantee that any of the stuff you have on the, well, I mean, you'd have to trust the farm, right? You'd have to trust the producer.
Yeah, and that's really what this is really getting back to. This has really been hurting a lot of farmers in Washington State because you got real deal cannabis farmers trying to sell their product on the market to make vape carts and make edibles and all this stuff. But a lot of the processors don't want it because they're buying all this cheap, made-up THC. But let's get to the point of the story, and you can go over to ganjapreneurs.com and find this. I wrote a story on this. So the point of this whole thing is that LCB finally came out and said, this is not allowed. They had a whole, you can read two articles I wrote on this, though. They had one, they had a couple meetings that, I'm telling you, Dick, there were some really, like, fireworks going on in the meeting. You don't see a lot of fireworks in Washington state politics. Everybody trying to stay subdued, and a lot of times they have everything kind of worked out before they get on camera and on the microphone. If you folks go over and check it out over the WSLCB, some of these special board caucuses, they were getting really fiery, a lot of stuff going on, but they finally come out and banned this practice. So this is no longer allowed in Washington state.
Effective when?
Well, effective right now. But
so they can't, okay.
All that stuff still out there on the market, though. They don't, and this is another little factoid. Washington state is one of the only legal cannabis states that does not have a recall system.
Oh, y'all don't?
No, so there is no recall for this.
Well, so, there's got to be a way for the stores to do voluntary recalls, because I know stores pull stuff off their shelves voluntarily all the time here because, you know, a customer will find bugs in it or something. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there is some, but you know, it's like, you know how the market's so cutthroat. You're not if you're a store, you're not going to want to be the store out there going and say we got contaminated product on our shelf, because that's going to mess up stores. And there's, you know, it's just like this. It still is like the wild, wild west out here in Washington state. And so we're just bringing this story to folks, just telling you, if you're buying the vape carts out there in Washington state, make sure that you're getting brands that you know. And if you're buying flower, like Dick was saying, the farms, make sure that you're checking out farms you know. You can go online. You can ask for the certificate of analysis at the store. If the store does not have a certificate of analysis for the product that you're buying, I would not buy it. And so you can go online and do a little research. And I have a couple brands that I use, and I'm sticking with it. I'm not changing them. I'm no longer shopping around for brands. I have like one brand, maybe two, and that's it. Because you just never know. And it's kind of crazy what we're going through right now in an apparent legal state, Dig.
Yeah. Do you know if there is a good resource online maybe that people could go, you know, look up and kind of do a good place to start doing their research on some of this stuff?
I would say Jim McCray's blog, which right off the top of my head, I don't have that. If you go back a couple episodes and you look, if you go online or on Facebook and search for him, some of his posts are public too. Do you remember the name of his blog?
I don't, but can you find it and put a link of it in the show notes so we can put it up on our website?
Yeah, I'll give it to you when we produce this show, because people do need to kind of go out there and look. And I think he actually did put together a list that he put out there of some brands that haven't given him a cease and desist letter. So just educate yourself out here in Washington state. And hopefully we can get control of this market, because I was really afraid this was going to start damaging the farmers because all the people not being able to sell the stuff. But we're going to move on past this story. But I don't want to – there is a whole nother piece of this, Dig, on how sort of it is actually kind of absurd to say that you can't make THC in the 502, considering when you decarboxylate cannabis, it makes THC. So if you make an edible, you're actually making THC right now. So,
well, I mean, even if you light a joint, aren't you technically manufacturing a little bit of Delta 9?
Well, a lot, because everything in that joint is Delta 9A or THCA or acidic THC. And so when you light it, that's when it burns into THC. So, yeah, it's every time you're breaking, every time you're firing up a joint, you're kind of breaking the law if you're according to the LCB, because you are actually synthesizing THC right there in front of you. It is a big mess, Dig, and that's why we have to keep on educating people. And this is why I'm always like, people are like, oh, well, cannabis is not a big deal. But it really is, because if you can't figure out this, how in the world are you going to figure out something like climate change? You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the states, yeah, there's a lot of lessons to be learned from Washington state and the mistakes they've made rolling out and regulating their cannabis market. And I think if anyone sees regulators or lawmakers or anybody, activists, coming out of Washington and touting their laws, I think you need to treat that person with a lot of skepticism.
All right, so we are going to move on, and the rest of the show is actually some good news, I believe. So the rest of our stories are actually good news. We're getting out of Washington. I've actually kind of gotten where I don't even like reporting on Washington, D.C., because it's so wild and sort of downbeat all the time. The stories are just always so weird and crazy. But we're going to move on to Arizona, and this is a really good news. And we talked about Las Vegas and their social clubs, but Arizona has their first hotel that is friendly to cannabis.
That's the Clarendon Hotel and Spa in downtown Phoenix. Hotel managers say it is Arizona's first cannabis-friendly hotel. And I looked into the article a little bit, and I actually got some information of the layout of the hotel a little bit.
Yeah, let's know.
The cannabis sleeping rooms are going to be located on the west side of the hotel property, where guests can partake in edibles, flower, and vape. You can purchase them at your local dispensary, and they have designated areas within the hotel grounds where you can actually smoke flower. Isn't that amazing?
That is nice. And I've spent a little time in Oregon staying in hotels, and it was always hard because we always had to get and it was always with some blind folks, and a couple of us were medical cannabis patients, and so we always had to take our blind canes and, like, wander off out into the city and get out of the hotel to go smoke our cannabis.
And you couldn't even look to see if the coast was clear.
No,
so you didn't even know if you were being discreet.
It was so absurd. Like, we were walking up and down the sidewalk. It was so weird, too, because, like, we don't know where we're at. You know, we're, like, totally blind, like, okay, we're going to go.
And
one of my friends, he's real adventurous, and he's just like, all right, let's go. And so we go, and it's like, are you sure you know where you're going, buddy? He's like, oh, yeah, I know. And it's like, oh, okay. But it's so stupid that they don't allow. Now, I understand the, it does stink and everything, but they do have products that help. Like, these hotels have these scrubbers in the room.
Yeah, they're like a really elaborate, like, moving air filtration system for the rooms. Now, you're not allowed to smoke cigarettes in these places. It's just cannabis.
Yeah, and, you know, you can burn the sheets, and it's a fire hazard. So there's a lot of reasons not to let people smoke right in the rooms, I think. But maybe having these designated areas is a great idea. And something else I thought was cool is the hotel actually has a car that would drive you to the dispensary. And you could buy bongs and pipes and buy your cannabis, and then you could just drive. They'd ride you right back to the hotel.
And I'm reading that the dispensary it drives you to actually will rent you a bong.
Wow. I'm telling you, man. And see, this is what we're talking about in Washington State. Like, where the heck is this cool stuff?
Can you imagine?
If you tried to do that here, the LCB would be knocking on your door going, what are you doing? You're like,
There are so many hotels in Washington State that are so cool already. Like, there is a hotel in Tacoma called the Hotel Murano that has all a different, like, glass artist, like, featured on each floor, and it's beautiful glass art. How cool would that be if they just had like a part of their parking lot that was, like, marked with a green square where you could go smoke weed and then go back up to your room and look at the glass art? That would be so cool.
Yeah.
Why can't they? It's not that hard.
Yeah, and this really is the future, because it's just going to be, you know, not like everybody's going to move to Arizona because of the hotels allow cannabis in them, but there will be a lot more tourists that will go. And I just think it's a great idea, and it's innovative. It's what the goal is of Dig and I, which is to make cannabis just like everything else. You know, you don't have to be going wandering around some strange city to go use your drug in shame, like Dig says. Go hide in shame, stoner. You know, you actually get to go to the hotel and enjoy yourself just like everybody else. So way to go, Arizona, because this is all from their law, you know, in state law. So way to go, Arizona.
Yeah, and did you want to move on to the next story where we're seeing some interesting results on opioid-related ER visits?
Yeah. And this is a story out of the Pitt Graduate Medical School. Is that right, Dig?
It's the Pitt Graduate School of Public Health.
There we go. I don't have the story right in front of me. And they did a story, and they said in 2017, right around the time that California, Maine, Massachusetts, and a couple other states were legalizing cannabis, they saw a drop in opioid visits to the ER.
Yeah, and this is interesting. This was a short-term drop, and then a 7.6%, right? So we're creeping up on 10%. This is substantial. And there's a few reasons for this. They think that it declined because overdoses declined because some people were having success managing their pain that they used to treat with opioids, now with cannabis. Now they think it was temporary because while cannabis was treating their pain, their underlying condition that's caused them to start using opioids, it didn't really help as much with their other symptoms of opioid use disorder, right? Like the actual withdrawals and stuff this. And this research actually points to the fact and shows that cannabis is not a gateway drug. If anything, it might be a gateway out of sustained and heavy drug use.
Yes, and that was the one thing I got out of this article, and it said a couple different times that cannabis was unequivocally not a gateway drug, and they repeated that over and over again. And that's my own experience too. It wasn't cannabis that led me to other things. It was the fact that we had to be in places with those drugs that would lead you to other drugs. It wasn't necessarily the cannabis, but I know a lot of people that are addicts that say they use medical cannabis to stay off of opioids. The innumerable amount of veterans that I know, oh, I'm off of pharmaceuticals because of cannabis. So like you were saying, and this is good to have some science beside this, it's actually a exit drug instead of a gateway drug.
It keeps me off the bottle. I used to have a substantial drinking problem, and now I don't drink hardly at all because of cannabis. So there's a lot of ways that cannabis, you know, can be a tool for harm reduction or cessation of other more harmful drugs in your life if you want it to be.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that on the air. And I have to say the same for me, too. And I, with a lot of other drugs as well, I use cannabis to basically just help with a lot of medical issues I have. And I don't have to use other drugs. And one of those especially is alcohol, which is very easy to get. So it's very easy to abuse. But cannabis is definitely something that keeps me from drinking. I haven't drank in 5 years, I think, 6 years.
And oh, so, wow, that's a long dry stretch. Good job.
Yeah, I'm no longer drinking. I started drinking, believe it or not, when I was about 21. And I drank a little bit before, you know, here and there through high school. But then when I was 21, it was like, well, that's the thing you do. And just basically drank for 20 years straight. Not every day, but a lot. And decided to stop that. But cannabis is definitely something that helps me when I'm around a bunch of people that are drinking, that is something that I can enjoy while other people are enjoying their drinks. And it is a great medicine for those kind of things.
Oh, yeah. I usually have a drink about every 6 months. I usually allow myself a bourbon and Dr. Pepper on the 4th of July and another bourbon and Dr. Pepper on Christmas. But that's about it for me.
All right. Well, you deserve it, veteran. So, yeah, that sounds good.
Where do you think I learned how to drink so much?
Oh, man. Yeah, bourbon and Dr. Pepper sounds good. But yeah, we're going to let's get out of our drink recommendations here, and let's move on to our next story, which is out of Colombia, South America. And this is a story that's been developing, and we'll just talk about this really quick. Colombia has been exporting medical cannabis for a couple years. I believe they first started doing it in 2019, but they were just like exporting creams and salves and oils and all these things, which is a really big deal to begin with, that they're actually exporting cannabis out of the country. But now, guess what they can export now? What is Colombia famous for? That Colombian gold, dried cannabis flower. Now they can export that. Hello.
Yeah, so they've lifted their own internal ban on the exportation of dry flower. And they are going to start doing international commerce with cannabis flower. And I got to say, good job, Colombia, first of all. Colombia is not screwing around here. They have invested in large greenhouse complexes, innovative growth sciences. They're doing stuff a little different there because they have a different climate, and they're doing really good stuff. It's all the actual stuff. You need to start a thriving legal and international cannabis infrastructure. We will not be able to compete with our like startup culture where there's a lot of investment and a lot of failure. It's going to be really embarrassing if Colombia does mass grown weed better than America. Everyone's had this specter of Philip Morris coming in and destroying all the little farmers. But you know what? What if it's the Colombian Cannabis Industry Association? These guys are not screwing around, and they've beat us to the international market. So we're starting at a disadvantage. We could have America really needs to get this figured out so we can start exporting flower both across state lines and internationally, because we can do it better than anyone else in the world. And the only way we're going to be the lead exporter in cannabis is if we establish these markets first. Colombia understands this and is racing to take over market share where we could have been. We export guns and war in America. Wouldn't it be nice if we could export something a little nicer? A little greener? I think so.
Yeah, that would be really nice. But we are so far behind. I mean, we can't even export cannabis from Washington to Oregon, the two most famous, and California. So though the Emerald Triangle, literally these three states here have been pushing the cannabis industry for all these years, we can't even import between each other. If Dig were to give me a couple pounds of cannabis, that's totally illegal. So this whole thing in the United States, we are very far behind. But I wanted to mention something that I really think is cool in Colombia for the audience to think about is, you know, we talk about in the and coming up next in our segment, we'll have a garden update from Uncle Dig. But we talk about when we grow cannabis, you do the 24 hours of light on, or you can also do the 18-6, and you veg the plant out, and then you switch it over to 12-on-12, and that flowers out the plant. Well, Colombia naturally has a 12-12 cycle going on all the time because of they're sitting right on the equator. So what they have done is they're using lights to veg, and then they just switch the lights off when they get the plants big enough, and they can run out three cycles, big massive cycles a year, instead of here in the United States where it's usually two. Colombia, because they got that 12 on 12 off all the time, they are putting out massive amounts, and like you're saying, they're gonna beat us to it. And it might not be Philip Morris, it might be Colombia. And wouldn't it be ironic how all these years the United States has been trying to beat back the drug war, especially in Colombia, and then they are the ones that come and actually tank our capitalist drug economy?
That is going to be them. Colombia literally is the only country that wins the war on drugs.
Wow. And I would just have to say good on them for doing it. And it's bad on us for getting so far behind on us. And it is also bad on us for spending all that money, all those years blowing up South America to try to stop the drug trade instead of like what we're doing now, trying to export it, try to trade, normalize it. So this is good news out of Colombia. And there's other countries that do it too. Canada, Germany, Switzerland. And Israel is one, too. So Australia, I think, starting to do this, too. So maybe the United States will come along.
Yeah, I think so. But it might take a little too slow, and we might lose our international place that we are were virtually assured at the beginning of this decade.
All right. So next time, we're moving up to a Dig Garden update. It's been a while, Dig, so let's hear what you got to say.
Uncle Dig's garden update. Hi, guys. It is the 25th of July, 2021. We are in gardening zone 8B, and this is Uncle Dig with a garden update. The smoke has been moderate, but not enough, I hope, to block out the light. The weather is getting cooler in that the daily highs sometimes dip into the 80s, and I shiver in the yard sometimes shirtless at night. My auto-flowering cannabis is almost done. In fact, if I hadn't run out of room in my drying space, I would have harvested the last one already. As soon as one of my candy cane plants is ready to trim, I will cut down the Afghan mass. I cannot give you yields on the other auto-flowers yet, as they're not done drying, but the Tangerine Dream yielded a half ounce of smokable flower per plant. I didn't weigh the trim, but I got about 14 1-gram size joints from the trim. Take that for whatever it is worth to you. My salsa garden is going well. I am harvesting Thai peppers, a very tiny bit of cilantro, and my other peppers will be harvested any day now. I have rainbow chilies, jalapenos, and serrano peppers. And on top of all that, my tomatillos are starting to put on fruit as well. Homemade salsa, here we come. I'm growing everything but the lime, lemon, and salt. And also, on top of all of that, my photo period cannabis is doing very well, and one of my CBD Dutch treats is already in week two of flower and just starting to put on bulk. So that will be nice to not have to buy morning smoke soon. The other two seedlings of this type are stretching, but not flowering yet. Keep this in mind with seeds. Just because something is the same cultivar, there is some genetic variance in seeds. This can be fun, but it can also cause problems when providing reliable medicine. Keep this in mind for your garden. My black domina are doing well and are just starting to go over my head. They may flower soon. I am unsure yet. They have an enticing darker hue just around the edges of the leaves. I hope I get a dark flowered variety this time. Part of the reason I bought this black domina was for her rumored dark, almost black appearance when flowering outdoors. Wish me luck. My star killers are doing very well, and I'm sure will start flowering any day. They are over my head as well. Now, of course, it's the bag seed chronicles, right? So I've got to grow a bag seed. And the bag seed this year is Blue Dream crossed with Strawberry Haze, maybe, allegedly. And it is stretching, and it is now over my head as well. Oh, by the way, in case you were wondering how tall my head is, I am just shy of 6 feet tall. Now, the shortest photo period plant by far I have is the Alien OG. Now, it is doing well and is showing no signs of flowering or pre-flowering stretch. She is still firmly, happily in veg. And really, that's it for today's garden update. Let's overgrow the world.
All right, welcome back, everybody, and thank you so much for that garden update, Dig. It is great to hear an update of what your plants are doing. Interesting times these lately with the drought and everything going on. So we'll be moving into the fall coming up, and you'll be having some more updates for us. But right now we're going to be getting into our It's a Bus segment. And this week it takes us on over to Oklahoma and a 3,500 plant bust. And I've been seeing some stuff out of Oklahoma kind of like this, Dig, where they passed medical cannabis. They were like the Goldilocks of cannabis for a while. They were like the golden boy of cannabis for a while. They were the medical cannabis is blowing up in Oklahoma, and everybody was so optimistic. But now the state is having a little growing pains, and they're having these busts. So tell us about this bust, and then we'll talk a little bit about Oklahoma in general just for a second.
Yeah. Right at the end of June in Pottawatomie County, Oklahoma, the special operations team of District 23 said investigators seized and burned more than 3,500 cannabis plant near Shawnee, Oklahoma, that Friday. So basically what happened is they found a grow that wasn't licensed. They cut it all down and they destroyed it. And local industry guys who at first were kind of ambivalent about this stuff early on now are saying stuff like, oh, you know, criminals can afford to sell their bud for cheap because they don't have to make up for the expenses like fees, taxes, and licenses. And so on enforcement, they say it's just not enough. I couldn't keep enough employees in there. The margins were so small, we're not making any money. So they're complaining about the high taxes and that the outlaw growers are able to outcompete them on the open market.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that, and they're kind of like, yeah, I just find it interesting how a lot of the medical people were kind of outlaw growers to begin with, but kind of got lucky and got into the market. And it's kind of what happened here in Washington a little bit. Some of the people that got up into the market out of the outlaw crowd kind of turned on the other group from before, rather than my preferred approach, which would be to go to these people that are growing these 3,500 plants and say, hey, how can we help you get legal here and do this correctly and fix it for all these other folks that are having trouble competing, make it a level playing field? But you were saying that the war on drugs right now with these busts is just wide open right now. So they are still going on with the war on drugs is still blazing on around the country.
Well, yeah, yeah. And I think this is kind of interesting. Like every summer we kind of see this, but I've been seeing it, especially this summer out where I am at. We're in what's called a special enforcement area for the DEA because of all the drug trafficking out here. And there's basically all up on the 5 on the West Coast and stuff, but they are busting outlaw grows up in the hills around here like crazy, like just like crazy. I feel like every month I hear about another like 35, you know, 1,000 plant grow being shut down in the hills or whatever. So people need to realize that the DEA is out in force nationwide. There is a push to get as rid of many like outlaw operators as possible. The closer we get to legalization, the police are going to get more aggressive, not less, because they know that they're going to lose out on a major source of revenue. So they are going to go hog wild. And every outdoor year, until full federal legalization, the DEA, you know, all these people are going to be as aggressive as whatever administration lets them be. And we know that Joe Biden is not pro cannabis. So he's going to try not to say anything, maybe even sign legalization. But up until that point, he's going to have all these pigs running around making everybody have a bad day.
Yeah. And I tell you, I have been really worried about this too on a different level, which is when it is federally legal, then the government and the taxes coming in, then they're going to have even more of an incentive to bust the underground market, because then the underground market is taking like what we were just talking about in Oklahoma. The underground market is out competing the legal market. And we know that we cannot have that in the United States when it comes to capitalism and how everything works. And so now the full force of the government will be unleashed even more so that they can bring in, make sure that all that legal cannabis, all the cannabis purchased in the United States is funneled through the legal system in order to capture the tax money. And I have to tell you, Dig, I am for legal cannabis and I'm for taxing it a little bit, but I am not for going out there busting all these people growing out in the hills. I'm not for terrorizing people. I have to say I stand in solidarity with those folks. We cannot allow the government to turn on these folks that have really pushed this up. We would not have legal cannabis right now if it wasn't for them underground grows supplying cannabis all these years all around the country.
Here's what I want to say to your local legal happy guy in his backyard who's got his legal 4 plants in Oregon or has a medical card and's growing or whatever, wherever they're at. The reason they're not messing with you in your backyard, the reason that the cops aren't in your backyard messing with you, is because they're out there messing with that grower out there in the hills. So as long as the guys are out there in their hills blowing it up, they are taking the heat off of us medical growers. Because the law can say, you know, whatever it wants about what's legal and what's not. The cops can come in and cut down your plants, and then you could show them that you were legal and not get arrested. But your plants are still cut down. A lot of times your dog is still shot. Okay? So I would rather them blow up the hills from here until next Tuesday and have the cops be up in the hills than down here in my yard. And that's how I feel about that. And if you don't like it, well, then maybe we should reapproach our approach to policing. And I'll approach my thoughts on bootleg cannabis.
Yeah, I get a little fired up there, Dig, and I totally agree with you. We have to stand tall with this legalization coming up, and we cannot continue to allow the police to go around and arresting everybody. And they just use it, like you were saying, they use it for a cash, you know, it's like a cash crop because they seize a lot of that cannabis. You know, here in Washington State, if they seize cannabis, they can actually sell that on the underground, on the 502 market. So if they seize, not from like a underground grower, but if they seize it from a legal grower and like shut down a legal grower, they can take all that stuff, even though it's illegally grown or something, and then flip it right back around and sell it. So we are just entering a crazy time right now in cannabis, and it's really important that people are engaging with their local officials and keep this on the forefront, on the front burner, because it still is a big problem. The drug war still rages on. And thanks for being with me today, Dig. We are going to get out of here. And my name is Lucas Barfield again. If you'd like to talk to me about cannabis or anything else, you can get in touch with me. Send over an email with the subject Cannabis Corner to info@radiotacoma.org. And if folks want to get in touch with you, Dig, or listen to your podcast, how can they find you?
Yeah, you can find my podcast, The Bagseat Chronicles, wherever you find your podcast. You can get in touch with me on Instagram. You can follow me at Uncle Dig. Or you can send me an email at UncleDig4@gmail.com. Everybody have a great time. Let's go grow the world.
This is Cannabis Corner, hosted by Lucas Barfield. If you would like to get in contact with your host, he is on Twitter at MJIsMedicine. Your musical selection is The Happy Monster by Chubby Jackson and his orchestra, recorded on 78 in 1947. You can find this music and much more at The Great 78 Project, an archive of historical music recordings at great78.archive.org. You are listening to 101.9 KTAH, Radio Tacoma.